Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Yep. Budgets live, not so live, with a new, I don't know if it's going to stick. It's too long, you know, it takes too long to get to the chorus. Biloxi Blues just fits in there. That's my song, 64. Had some good reaction to it last week. Still, it feels a bit forced. It feels like I'm just, I don't know. It feels a bit forced, but that is a song that I wrote many moons ago, like Biloxi Blues, about Highway 64. I live right off of it. It runs from Chattanooga to Memphis. It has nowhere in between. And that's kind of the basis of the song. So, anyways, kind of losing your mind on 64 tonight. But thank y'all for the kind words on that last week. But that's an oldie there. And this is a new show. This is Low Budget Live for August the 14th, 2023. You bunch of low lifers. Hope everybody's doing well out there, and life's treating you like it should, and I can't complain. Lately things have been things are going well, things are good. Sometimes I have to just kind of, you gotta step back and smell the roses. I talk about that a lot, and this is the last couple weeks have been some of that. I said last week that I was recording a little early before that MLF event up there in Saginaw was finished, because I was headed to the IndyCar race in Nashville with my crew and the boys and I and Harper and her boyfriend Keaton. We watched IndyCars go through downtown Nashville. And listen, I'm not a race guy, but my grandfather loved racing. I've watched it a ton growing up, obviously. But, man, you talk about like an electric event. Holy crap, dude. That was just fan-freaking-tastic. Had a great time. Shout out to my buddy Jeff Stanford for making that possible. And go check out Sound Designs for all your wrap needs. TN Wraps here, Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. Jeff Stanford. A lot of y'all pros out there know him. Boat Wrap King, but Boat Wrap Czar, Jeff Stanford. But yeah, we got to like 10 feet off the track, man. It was wild. It was wild. But then I'm a little hoarse because I've been back in Nashville the past couple of days. My boys, the old Turnpike Troubadours, Ryman Residency, which is so awesome to say. Three nights at the Ryman. I did two of the three. I chickened out, couldn't do three in a row. My liver, my voice, nothing can handle it. I've been screaming, stomping, clapping, you know, just living it up at the Ryman. But those guys, man, if you get a chance, if they get close to you on this tour, they got the new record coming out in a couple of weeks. Go see them. My God, they're on fire. And it's really awesome to see. You know, I've had Mr. Engelman on here, Ryan Engelman, just to know that they were just gone for a few years and see where they're back now and people are just coming back out to see them after like a 3-year hiatus. It's amazing, man. It's really cool. It's so much fun. And listen, you do not have to wait on somebody to send you a viral clip of a song to think something's good. So there's a lot of good music out there. And what I mean by that is I've been sent that redheaded dude singing in the woods so many times this week. And yeah, it's a cool tune. That's fine. Quit sending me that song. Quit sending me that song. For the love of God, stop sending me the guy singing about fudge rounds. Stop sending me that. Okay? Yeah, it's cool. Stop sending me that. Good for that guy. You can get famous on the internet. That's good. It's good. But I've had so many of my friends send me that guy, Oliver or something or another. If you're watching this, you've seen the clip this week. If you're in my algorithm whatsoever in life, you've heard and seen that clip. I'm not being a hater. I'm just tired of seeing it already. So wild, man, how one viral thing, though, can kind of launch you into this world. So lots of good music out there. They ain't playing it on the radio very much, but lots of good music out there. You gotta go look for it. So thanks to the Turnpike Boys and thanks to the Triple Threat for going with me to Nashville, which has become 2 weekends in a row. I live an hour and a half south of Nashville, southern Middle Tennessee, and Nashville's always been one of my favorite cities. But in the last like 5 years, it's just transformed into something totally different. And now it's like a mix of Bachelorette Party Barbie and The Walking Dead. Like, there's just like, hey, man, you got any money? Man, I need gas in my car over here. Can I get like $30? And then, woo, girls everywhere. Like, they're on the pedal tab. Whoa! And then you got to go here. And he's literally taking a dump in the bushes. It's bananas, dude. And walking around up there at night, you see these girls. They're unattended. They're in their 20s. They're walking around. They're staggering drunk. And then you got old boy over there. He's shooting up. And he's in the corner. And you're like, I don't want my kids up. This is what is happening right now. It's bananas, man. And look, I could easily be one of them dudes, like, hard on their luck. Like, I know I'm a fortunate guy. I have walked that line my entire life. So, of just, you know, one screw up away from being on the sidewalk. So, like, I get it. I get it. I think a lot of y'all watching can you know, sympathize with what's going on out there. But still, man, damn, Nashville's just kind of out of control. And it feels dangerous in a lot of places. And like I said, I know it like the back of my hand, grew up there, played music there for many years. Like I know Nashville in and out, and it's just like, it's not the same place. And I know a lot of you, like, you like to go there. You like to have a good time. That's cool. That's fine. Just head on a damn swivel up there to Walking Dead, man. Hey man, like our hotel was just engulfed by folks that you thought you were going to take a shank to the jugular just trying to walk in the damn front door. And it's like right downtown, nice hotel, whatever. It's bizarre. It's very bizarre. What's not bizarre, the sponsors of this show. We appreciate the folks like Startron, kicking ethanol in the teeth in your weed eater and your chainsaw, most importantly. In that outboard engine, nothing will ruin a great day on the water like an outboard engine that won't run due to stupid dumb ethanol. Kick it in the teeth with Startron. Needed the sound after that. That was so good. Pro Guide Batteries, ProGuideBatteries.com. You can use code LBL10, ProGuideBatteries.com. Save you some money on those amazing lithium trolling batteries, those amazing lithium starting batteries they have now, just released. Get on there and check them out. The AGM cranking battery, though, if you're not looking for a lithium, they're money. They're money for trolling batteries as well. Just a little heavier than lithium. Depends on what you're after. They got it all. ProGuideBatteries.com. LBL10 saves you cash. Baitworks.com. And that is bait-wrx. BAIT-wrx.com. And actually, I'm slacking. Imagine that. My boy Brock from up there at old Baitworks. So from August the 14th, starting right now today, through the 20th, 25% off Strike King 1.5s and 2.5s. Strike King 1.5s and 2.5s, bait-works.com. Strike King Square Bills. The 1.5 is the GOAT. It's got Kevin on the package, if you don't believe it. I do think out of all the square bills you can buy, production-wise, the 1.5 is just like, is it. It really is. Like, dude, that one, absolutely, there are a lot of good ones out there. Don't get me wrong. The 1.5 is just money more times than not. Every time I try to prove that it's not and throw something else, I just always, like, little Trey ends up beating me, as y'all see in a lot of our videos, by just throwing a 1.5, okay? So 25% off the 1.5 and 2.5s for this week, the 14th through the 20th. Bait-works.com gets you some LOB jigs, power finesse jigs while you're there as well. Thank the folks for Baitworks. Duncan-10 saves you cash there and lets them know you're a low lifer. Last but not least, where's it at? Hang the banner. Hang the banner. Wear the hipster hat. Express Boats, Hot Springs, Arkansas. The official boat of Low Budget Live. And the Traveling Circus, the X21 Pro with the Yamaha 250 show on the back. Fastest hole shot in the game. I'm telling you, beast mode. More storage than you can shake a stick at. Sea deck bow to stern. I absolutely love it. Y'all hear it every week because it is true. It is not hard to promote things or get your energy level right to promote something that you actually use a lot and you care about. And the old Express X21 is that. And just good people, man. Just I can't say that enough. The Herndon family, Clay Connors, old CC, good dang people. Had a pro staff call this week. My brothers, Caleb Summerall, Billy Lowen. Good ones, man. More to come, maybe. Got some rumor mill stuff flying around about Express. But can't be talked about yet. Can't be talked about yet. Sooner than later, we'll get to make a fun announcement here on LVL. Appreciate the folks from Express Boats. Building excitement since 1966. All right. Here we go. So last week I had already recorded and was headed to the Nashville race, and then the MLF thing went down how it went down. And I'd already recorded for the week, and I had so many people like, oh, and I appreciate y'all for being like, LBL is going to be fire this week, blah, blah, blah. I'd already recorded with Joey C, and it was his week. He earned it. He's a two-time Elite Series champ. He does things the right way, okay? There's no shade in his game. So for me to – and I could have recorded – I started to record a new intro and just leave the Joey interview in, and I didn't feel good about that. And so and what I'm talking about, of course, is people, you know, Matt Becker wins, and he wins Angler of the Year. MLF had a chance for like the storybook, you know, a man who built his career with bass and made the move in Kevin Van Dam, the monster, the goat of the industry, 23-time champ, the guy. They have a chance. He is storybook. He's leading. The weather changes, and he loses to Matt Becker there at Saginaw Bay. But then Matt Becker also wins Angler of the Year. Well, of course, he is one of the anglers that was in question up there at Cayuga. He says it wasn't cheating, that it was the tournament director's fault, that it was a gray area. And regardless of whether it's gray or cheating, whatever. Matt's a good fisherman. I've always liked Matt. I think it was questionable at best up there at Cayuga. I've talked about that. I'm sure he doesn't like hearing that. That's fine. He also has two trophies to drown out the haters, as people say. I think it's crap. I do. I think it's crap. I always think that this one's got an asterisk by it for an Angler of the Year. If I was him, I wouldn't want to win it that way. But I'm sure the check looks good in the bank and the trophies look good on the shelf. As long as he can sleep with it, that's fine. I'm sure he can. Just fine. But that's kind of my take on it. But I had a lot of people, man, you gotta do it. I don't know. I'm almost numb to it at this point that I don't think things were handled correctly. And it's his fault, but it's also the league's fault that they don't handle things like they should. And there were more guys than him that were shady. So, oh well, it is what it is. The guys that need to be making noise are the Jacob Wheelers that finished second, the Odd Defoes. I'd be pissed. I wouldn't be okay with taking the L in the Angler of the Year and knowing I was beat by that. Those are the guys that got to make noise. I can only say so much. I'm not an angler. I don't work for the organization. I can voice my opinions, and I certainly do that, and I always will, regardless of what anybody thinks about it. And it sucks. It sucks. And it sucks for Kevin because I feel like that story ended up overshadowing. He was beat fair and square. Becker did nothing wrong, obviously, at Saginaw Bay. He's a great angler. He's a great smallmouth fisherman. He won. He battled through rough water, got the win there over Kevin. Kevin's area was trashed, and it's a shame that he couldn't leave with a win. I think he does fish the Red Crest deal, though, so I think that's really his final tournament with Kevin. But again, thanks to Kevin Van Dam for all he's done. I'd like to get him on. I know he did Chris and Trait's podcast, I saw, and I know I want to do one with him, but I want it to be open and honest, and we'll see. I want to get Kevin. I would love to, been honored to have him on, but I'd like to really get into things, and we'll see. We got a good guest today that I feel like we're going to get into some good things here in just a few minutes. But there's something else real quick before we jump to our guest that I want to we'll shoot our guest a text real quick. Sorry, I can't type and talk. Text our guest. So I think something that hit me, and my buddy Brad Knight actually said this, and he brought this to my attention, but on Kevin retiring, and I talk a lot about how the sport has changed significantly from a pro fishing level, and where are we as far as an overall sport. And I feel like we might be smaller now. You know, you feel like you're growing the sport with everything going on, but name one national media outlet that shared Kevin Van Dam retiring. One. And I mean, we're talking about, we've had the Denny Browers, Kevin Van Dam's, Mike Iaconelli's on late night talk shows before, dude. Denny Brower. We've been on the cover of Wheaties boxes, like pro fishing in the 90s. This was in the 90s and early 2000s. So it's astonishing to me that this guy doesn't get national media attention whatsoever. If it was out there, I missed it. It certainly wasn't shared in any forum that I look at. Okay. So that sucks because you get these like walleye cheaters and it's worldwide. The sensationalism in that, but the guy that has been the guy in tournament bass, no national media. It sucks, man. It really sucks to see. Kind of got my feels about that this week a little bit. I'm like, you know, sucks. And I understand a lot of that was happening when ESPN owned Bassmaster and different things, and they had resources and contacts in the national media audience world, I guess. But, the GOAT deserves it, Kevin Van Dam. All right, two Elite Series left. Real quick, Champlain and St. Lawrence. Good luck, boys, this week. Going to be interesting to see the AOY race shake up. More smallmouth, maybe some largemouth Champlain. We'll see what's going on up there. They've had some rain. Might be a little high. Might be some flipping going on up there. Champlain can get rowdy with a flipping bite. Speaking of St. Lawrence River, I want to say this real fast before we get to our guest. Congrats to my old buddy B.A. Brent Anderson. Won that Toyota Series up there on the St. Lawrence River. He's been living up there the last couple summers, guiding. If you're looking for a guide trip, he's probably booked up all the time up there. But Brent, Kentucky Lake King, he's won 10 events with FLW/MLFLW. 10 events. This is the 10th one. BFL champ, multiple times over, All-American qualifier. He's a badass. BA stands for badass. Brent Anderson won the Toyota Series up there, man. And congrats to Brent. Good dude. Good freaking fisherman. If you've ever been in a boat with him on a guide trip, you understand that. And a lot of people listening may have been out with Brent on the Tennessee River or many of the other bodies of water he guides on. All right. We're going to get the sauce with this guy presented by the W Sauce, America's Worcestershire Sauce. And their new breakfast sauce, check it out. This guy is somebody that I've looked up to for a long time. I fished tournaments against him many, many years ago on the Tennessee River. He was an absolute stone cold assassin killer. You never knew, what you were going to get with him. I mean, somewhere between 25 and 30 pounds most of the time, especially on Gunnersville. He is the honey badger. It's what he has become known nationally as, but this guy, $2.3 million in career earnings, Forrest Wood freaking Cup champ, Bassmaster Elite champ, multiple time Bassmaster Open champ. We're going to get him on the phone right now, Randall freaking Tharp. Ladies and gentlemen.
Hello?
The Honey Badger has entered the chat. I love it. How are you, dude?
I'm good, Luke. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. I really appreciate you coming on. I just did in my intro there before I called, I said this guy's been kicking my teeth in for many years. I can remember being young, man, and showing up to BFLs on Gunnersville, and they're like, hey, man, there's that Tharp guy. Damn, there's that Tharp guy. That Tharp guy's going to take our money. And he did all the time. All the time. Man, there's a team tournament. Who's here? Oh shit. It's Randall Tharp. Every time, buddy. You were the king, man. The king.
Man, the good old days. I sure do miss those times, man. And I look back on it all now and I don't know that in my entire career I had more fun than I had back then. Like, it was just a good bunch of guys and great competition, and things were a lot simpler then, because, you know, I don't think I was trying to make a living doing it then. So those were the good times. I actually had dinner the other day with my old team partner Marshall Deacon. I asked him, I said hey Marshall, when I retired, will you take me back? And he said he would. So
that's awesome. Well, I was fixing to ask him, because that was the combo. It was Tharp and Deacons, man. And Marshall, you know, obviously a good dude, a saint of a guy. And even though he runs around with that Alex Davis character every now and then, I don't blame him. I won't blame him for that. I'll blame Alex for that. Alex is a clinger. We all know that. He's trying to get those Deacons dots.
I don't hold that against him.
Yeah, I don't hold that against him. But yeah, that was the pair. What time frame was that? Was that late 90s, early 2000s, I guess? That was early 2000s, I'm thinking. Like 01, 02?
Probably from maybe 2003 to all the way up to maybe 7.
Okay.
Me and him had a really good run there. Okay. For several years, and I mean, he's still pretty dominant. Still, I see his name. He'll get a win or two every year,
yeah.
You know, whether it's a BFL or, you know, a CBA, any of those little tournament trails around there. He's always a factor still.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. There's no doubt. Yeah, he won the All-American, I guess, on Pickwick, wasn't it? Didn't Deacons win down there? I think he won the All-American he win on Pickwick? I think he did a couple years ago. I think so.
I think he's done really well there. I know he's doing good at Seminole. The few times he's been down here close to where I live now, but he's just a great fisherman. And honestly, man, like, I can accredit a lot of my success to him, man. Like, I didn't have a clue how to catch a fish unless I had a flipping stick and was on the bank. And, you know, he just opened my eyes to that whole, especially the Tennessee River ledge game. And we excelled at a lot of those tournaments, thanks to him.
That's very cool to hear, man. He's a Tennessee River legend, and anybody listening to this that's ever fished a BFL on Gunnersville, like myself, you just prayed he didn't show up. If you wanted a chance, a lot, especially in like February, Marshall would just kick your teeth in February. It'd be 13 degrees out there, and he'd 29 pounds. Oh, okay. Thanks for coming, Marshall. Appreciate that.
Yeah, to let you know how long ago it was, I remember when GPS first came out, and I had one on my boat, and we would pull up on a spot, and I would be like, man, we're right on it. And he'd be like, no, we're not. And he would never look down. He still did things the old school way. Wow. And I still think his way's more accurate than what we have as far as GPS now. Like, that's how good he was out there, especially, you know, on anything from Chick all the way down to Wheeler. I mean, he had lineups all over those lakes, and they were just etched in his brain, and I'm sure they still are today.
That's so crazy to think, because now we do have, and you see people on social media and knocking technology because it's, oh, man, it just makes it easier. And I can think about Pickwick, Wilson, Wheeler with my dad, Gunnersville some, and he's like, hey, boy, line up with that house trailer on the bank and that second pine tree, right? You know what I mean? Like, and that was him. I mean, that was my childhood. We were off the bank in the summer, and you didn't have any of that. You had a paper map, and you were trying to line up where you caught them last time or how the point ran out there or where you got bit. And it's really crazy to think that I don't ever approach anything like that anymore. It's like, oh, here's my dot where I caught them last time, and you give it no thought and you just pull up and start casting. And man, those guys were better, I think, than what we are now. You know, do more fish get caught with electronics? You can see them. Absolutely. But there was something about those guys that could just go out there with feel and with the lineups and just kick your freaking teeth in. It was amazing.
Oh yeah, you're right. And I can name them all.
Of course. Of course you can. Yeah. And on a lake like Guntersville, I think it can't be taken lightly how hard that was, because it is so, even though you're shallow a lot of times on Guntersville, technically, you know, you're right off the river ledge, but it's shallow offshore. I think that's what throws people for a loop on that body of water in particular, is it's so offshore. Man, if you're off by an inch, you can be off by a mile on where the fish are. And those guys doing that by memory is just so crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, man, I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. You know, you're a guy that I said in the intro, you've never been afraid to speak your mind. You are indeed the honey badger. You ain't scared of nothing. You're going to go at it. You're going to do it Randall's way. You know, go big or go home in your entire career. And it's worked out, dude, since 2008, $2.3 million in earnings, a big Forestwood Cup trophy, Bassmaster Elite, Bassmaster Opens. Now you're the ultimate match fishing champ. That's cool to add to the shelf.
Yeah, that was actually just aired yesterday.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to talk about it, but I've done Joe's show one time before, and I came close. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Wheeler won it that year. But man, there's a lot of strategy. It's well run. I'm actually excited. I get to do it again now that I'm the defending champion. Okay. So, man, it was good, man. I fished against some great fishermen, Cole Floyd. I fished against Gary Klein, second match, and then one of my good friends, Brandon Coulter, in the finals. And actually, I roomed with Cole prior to his match, and me and Coulter stayed together. So it was a lot. You know, it's
friendly
not very
fire.
Often. You go out to you go out to dinner and with a guy you're competing against, you know, the next day on national television, but. Man, to be honest with you, like it was just really lucky. Like, I actually fished the day before. I had a day off, and Brandon had to fish the day before. So Brandon went and caught all his fish, and I was able to go find new ones. And that's just the way the draw worked out.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't say it was 100% like fair,
but you'll take it.
But I will take it.
Yeah, you'll damn sure take it. Come on, man. Those don't come easily. They even let James Watson win one of those things last year, which is one of the funniest. I still have the clip, the uncensored clip that I would love to share of him losing his mind, losing bass with Paul Elias in the back of the boat. It's one of my favorite things that's ever happened in bass fishing. And he sent it to me. The unfiltered version is fantastic and probably needs to be posted at some point, but I'll let James do that. But no, I've loved that deal since, I mean, hell, that one's early 2000s as well, when Joe came out with that deal. And man, those things used to get freaking wild. I mean, I can remember some of the clips of guys running over each other's line and getting altercations and stuff back in the day. But the two things he's got going for him that I love the most, Fishburne will always be the GOAT, in my opinion. Love me some Fishburne, and Mark Randolph's just, I love the fact that he doesn't care to argue with everybody.
Yeah, I agree, man. Like, he's got a great crew, and I think he's learned over the years with some of those altercations and crazy things that happen. Like, he generally just invites a good group of guys now.
Yeah,
you know, guys,
for sure.
That everybody's going to get along. Everybody's going to have a good time, win or lose. Like, you know, a lot of that's out of your control, especially when you only get an hour and a half per period. But, Joe just, I think he's learned. And you don't do something for 20 years without getting better at
that's
it.
That's right.
So,
that's right. Yeah, in the early days, man, whoo, there'd be some – I can't imagine if there'd been social media when Ultimate Match Fishing first was popping off and the stuff that would come out of those. Because, man, it was – there were some lively ones back in the day on Guntersville and, whoo, I remember some of those, man. Interesting, but such a good show. And so congrats on that, dude. It just add it, like I said, add it to the hardware down there in PSJ where you reside.
You know, I haven't been able to get it out, but I'll probably wear it to dinner tonight. But,
yeah. Okay. So nobody listened to this other than maybe two or three folks that hopefully have gone down there and maybe not told anybody. Where are you going to dinner? Where's the Port St. Joe? Are you going to Joe Mama's? Where are you going with the belt?
Joe Mama's is good. I haven't been there in a while. I mean, it's finally, you know, it's so crowded down here. We don't go out much. But you know, for me and all my friends, that our go-to day in and day out is Pepper's down there. Like, it's the only place in tourist season that you can go in and get a table, and service is pretty good. So it's nothing fancy, you know, just a little Mexican place.
Yeah,
that's our go-to pretty much.
Well, I would wear it there, and then you got to wear it to the Piggly Wiggly for sure. You got to walk around the pig wearing the UMF belt. I need a picture of that at some point. Tell your lovely bride, take a picture and send it.
I'll see what I can do. I'll probably wear it to the golf course too, because I can't. My golf game's going south, so it makes me feel better about it. Just have my belt on.
Just to be the champ. Just to be the champ.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I was ticked off this summer down there because it was so crowded, and it was just more crowded than I'd ever seen it. Now, I will say, we're never down there during the 4th of July, and we were this year, and so we got what we asked for, I guess. But we like Shipwreck over there, and here I am saying on a podcast with a bunch of people over there in Mexico Beach, and it was like a 2-hour and 45-minute wait when we pulled up right when they opened the day we tried to go, and I'm like, you know what? I love this place, but no, I'm good on that. I'm good on all that. So we went back. We drove our butts back to Port St. Joe and went to Joe Mama's and got right in, so... it's crazy though, man, how that area. But dude, you guys have been down there, what, 5-6 years now? Or is it long?
No, it's actually going on 11 years.
Golly, crazy.
Yeah, we love it, man. I don't anticipate ever leaving this area. You know, we've had a couple houses on the beach and that. Now we live in town. It's kind of, we got a bigger piece of property with some room, and we like it, man. Like, I love fishing down here. I love the lifestyle. It's still, as far as everywhere I've ever been in the world fishing, in my opinion, this is still relatively untapped.
Yes, so, fantastic. And you're tarpon fishing. You go offshore fishing with some buddies. You redfish. I mean, but you've gotten into this fly fishing for tarpon deal. Seems to be your new obsession.
Dude, it's causing a few problems around the house. But but yeah, it's not, it's taken me 3 years now to get to what I would consider halfway decent, where I know what I'm doing at it. And, it's a lot of fun, man. I mean, just to watch a fish that's as big as you are,
mm-hmm.
you know, eat something that you made in your garage out of some chicken feathers. And then, you know, it's a bad addiction. Thank goodness it's kind of like deer hunting. Like, if it was year round, I probably would not be married still. But it's you know, we get you know, 2 or 3 months where it's really, really good here, and the whole season maybe about 5 months long. So you know, it's not too bad. But I prepare for it the same way a guy gets ready to go hunt a big deer. So
yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
A lot of prep goes into that. Like you said, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Yeah, they swim by a lot down there, but it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity on a fly to catch that, you know, that world-class fish. And you're right about that area being just, man, it is certainly untapped, so many different opportunities. But what led you guys there, though? I mean, was it a vacation that you went there, you ended up there? Did you know folks there in that area? But I don't think you and I have ever talked. Well, I know we've talked that area several times, but I can't remember ever hearing the story of how you guys kind of landed there.
Yeah, Sarah and I used to come down to the coast, you know, every year just for a vacation. We never came to this particular location until, I started my bass fishing career, and I got to be good friends with Rob Newell, who's our on-the-water reporter now at MLF. But he used to work for FLW, and that's where I met him. He covered the first national event I won was at Eufaula, and he covered it, and we kind of got to be friends at that point. And I think he invited me down here. He had a little, like a little block a long-term rental house right on the beach down there in Mexico Beach and invited me to come down here. Sarah and I came down, and me and him went into the bay fishing. And, I mean, the rest is just history, man. I fell in love with it. Like, it, at that time, it was relatively unknown.
Yes.
I mean, there was never anybody at the boat ramp. The fishing was unlike anything I'd ever seen. And, you know, it just opened a can of worms that I never could close.
I love that, man. If I always say, if I lived as close to Pick, like to the ocean as I do to Pickwick, I wouldn't know what a bass looked like. Like, I love saltwater just because I think the options are endless. You know what I mean? No matter the conditions, no, there's always something you can go do, I feel like, for the most part. A different species you can chase. And, man, those, when you get into that triple tail, you know, tarpon, reds, big speckled trout, but then, and we don't have them, obviously, on the Gulf Coast as much, but snook, like that whole thing. If you've never had the chance to do that and you're listening to this, go do it somewhere. Like, you know, a lot of people kind of shy away from saltwater, whether it's saltwater content or saltwater in general, because it's not approachable for a lot of people, right? You know what I mean? I think they can't identify with it, but gosh, it's so amazing. If you can get access to it, get you a guide trip, go do it. It's so fun.
Yeah, that's what I'd recommend. I mean, most people get overwhelmed with just the sheer size of it. And
yes.
You know, there are some good guides around here. I fish with a lot of them, and I mean, they can. That's just the best way to go. I mean, you know, maintenance and upkeep on saltwater stuff way more than it is on a bass boat. So let him do all the work. That's what you're paying for.
Listen, I brought my Express down to Apalachicola two summers ago, and my wife and I, and the first day I hit a crab trap. And when I hit it, it pulled my drain plug out and I almost sunk in the bay. I swear to God. And we've been out 10 minutes and I nailed a crab trap running across this flat. And I'd been in there before with a buddy of mine. I knew where I was going. I thought I did. And this crab trap pot was not marked, to be fair. But auto bilge kicks on. Marissa's like, "What's that?" I'm like, not good, I think. I don't know what's going on. And we ran across the bay into this little backwater. And anyways, I jumped back there. Yeah, water's almost over my batteries. And I look, and the crab pot is wedged between my nose cone and the transom. And the Express just got, you know, an old school drain plug and no remote drain or anything. And it's gone. It's completely gone. I reached down there. It's gone. I'm like, "Hey, honey, we got to get out of here. We're in, like, you know, a foot of water, you know, or less, in the mud, trying to get up." I'm like, I got her all but laying on the trolling motor. I mean, it was a disaster. And she goes, "Hey, I think you're fishing by yourself the rest of the weekend. I'm not getting back in this death trap." So crazy. And that is, but the things that rusted, though, just from being there like 3 days and washing it, flushing everything, you know, really taking care of your stuff, it's amazing. I can't imagine being in that environment day in and day out. It's rough on your gear. But I guess for you, though, being a bass guy, you know the crap that holds up, though. Now, you put it to the test down there.
Yeah, there's no doubt, man. And you learn. I've had several saltwater boats now, and you kind of learn how to take care of one, what you have to do. I mean, it's a lot more maintenance than what, as a bass fisherman, your normal guy deals with. So
oh, no doubt. My buddy,
it's just part of it, though.
It is. My buddy Darian, stupid Darian Craig with Y'all Sweet Tea, told me one time, he said, "Man, I like going." We had a friend in Panama City he would go with sometimes. He goes, "But I just get over having to clean the boat every time we get back." He's like, "This is bull crap." He's like, "We've been out all day long in the hot sun. Then we got to clean this boat for 2 hours. He's like, "Every day? This sucks." He's like, "Bass fishing, we just back it in the garage and go on." I'm like, "Yeah, it is true. It does. The work begins." It's like when you shoot a deer, the work begins once you pull the trigger kind of deal.
That's right.
Well, dude, something you said that sticks out to me is when you're talking about the old days at Guntersville, and I actually talked about this in the intro a little bit, just how things have changed so much, but that things were simpler then. And they were simpler then, and I think bass fishing potentially was at its, professional bass fishing was at its peak, with payouts and things. You know what I mean? Like in those days, we were living some crazy times. I mean, you when you won the cup, a half mil then, and we saw as much as $1 million in the cup in that time frame. We saw some $250,000 payouts in some FLWs during that time frame, and $10,000 checks down to 100th place. You know, just crazy things to think about when you look at where we are now, right? Same, you know, 100,000 across the board at pro levels, 300 grand for the biggest tournaments in the game now. Don't get me wrong, a lot of money if you win it, but it's smaller than what it was payout wise back then, right? Like it's crazy to think about.
No doubt. There's no doubt. The first Forest Wood Cup I fished paid $1 million.
Crazy, man.
I remember I finished second in 11. It paid 600 then. When I won, it paid 500. A couple of years after me, it paid 300. So, you know, I don't know. I think tournament fishing in general is growing. I think there's obviously
sure.
We didn't have high school and college yep. fishing. There's way more people fishing tournaments now than there's ever been.
I agree.
And I think that's a good thing. But, you know, making a living fishing, which I did it in the beginning of my career just through my tournament winnings. And mm-hmm. I wasn't the only one. You know, Christy, I think, was a year before me. A lot of really good anglers that I don't think we had any kind of major sponsor sport. I know I didn't. And, you know, I can remember going to Beaver Lake the first time scared to death. I'd never seen any water like that. It was one of those opens. It was like a $2,500 entry fee. I remember I finished 14th. I won like $36,000 for finishing 14th. And I remember coming home and telling my wife, I was like, man, I think we can make this work. You know, $36,000, like that's pretty good for a week.
Yeah, and a $2,500 investment. I mean, it's crazy to think about, man.
And I don't think a lot of the younger guys now, the younger generation even realizes that those times existed. And I don't think that was the peak of it, but it was that's when I got in it, and it was like still really, really good back then. Yes. And I wished I would have, you know, started younger in my life to see that, to see that era of professional bass fishing. But it's definitely changed. And, you know, now I don't, where I used to pay my bills with tournament winnings, I mean, now I pay them because I've worked, you know, for 15, 16 years now building these relationships with companies in the industry, and I work for some great people. And I've been doing it a long time. And I, you know, the guys coming into the sport, I mean, it takes a long time, if I can give them any advice, to build those relationships. And it just, stuff like that doesn't happen overnight.
No, not at all, man. And I know exactly what you mean by, I've seen your career and, you know, I keep up and I'm a fan of all you guys. I've been lucky enough to know a lot of you for a long time, compete against you and work with you through different companies and things, but you're a guy that you have been very loyal to a lot of companies, and you can see that. And you've had Signature Series products with different folks. And man, it's for me, and maybe for a fan that just keeps up with it, whether it's casually or maybe even, you know, intensely keeps up with the sport, they might miss details sometimes. And what I mean by that is, for me, I think it's a testament to an angler, to a person, when they get Signature Series products. And you're a guy that you've had several of those, and you've got your arc, you know, your rods, you've got baits out there with your name and face, man. Hell, they run the Honey Badger at, you know what I mean? Like, they believe, no, they're Randall Tharpe fans. And that's a testament to who you are as a person on and off the water. And I think that might not get recognized enough by people. They may say, oh, well, of course he's pushing this because it's got his name on it. Well, you need to think about the company believes in this guy. They want him to be their face of their brand. And dude, that's got to make you proud. I know you're a humble guy, but like, that's got to make you proud when you sit back and go, hey, did you see that commercial they just ran, the damn Honey Badger? Yeah, that's me right here. I mean, that's gotta be cool, man. And an honor.
Man, it is. And it's a responsibility though, that I don't take lightly, like putting my name on something. I mean, when you called. I mean, I've got stuff strewn all over the garage and, you know, new stuff I'm working on. I mean, it's I used to invest 100% of my time to everything that went on the water, you know, getting ready for a tournament, pre-fishing for, you know, two months before the cutoff or whatever. And now I just don't have that time to invest in that because, you know, this other stuff to me is my priority now. You know, like I've been working on this jig for like a year and a half now. And it really, I mean, it's a flipping jig. I mean, how much can you do to make a Sparky head better than a Sparky head? You can't, but you know, we built a hook to put in it and it's, you know, I think it's pretty special kind of thing, but that was a project that, you know, a year and a half that I just completed and we just redid my rod line. It's been our best selling rod line for 4.5 years that we've been selling them. And, you know, to change something that's still selling really good's a risk, but yes. We knew we could make it better. So we did. And, you know, I'm actually, believe it or not, you can't even buy these yet. And we're already working on the next best thing, you know, testing really? New stuff and working with new stuff. And, that's my life now, man. Building rods, reels, baits, you know, trying to build a better mousetrap and, you know, using what I've learned through tournament fishing all these years to do that.
Man, I think that's every angler's dream though, right? If you get in the pro fishing game, you hope somebody like I just said, thinks enough of you, your abilities, your ideas with tackle, the fact you like to tinker and go, hey, we want to pay you on a pro level and we want to work with you. You tell us what we need to build. Dude, that is the dream. That is the dream. And I got to do it on a small scale with Baitworks this year with my little finesse jig thing. And when they called about that, they're like, hey, we'd like to do something. And even on that scale, it's so fun. And it's like, it is an honor. It's like, what? You want me to do that? Okay, cool. And I can just do what I want. I can run the plays I want. Yeah, absolutely. We'll do it. You draw it up. You make it how you want to make it. Okay. Awesome. Like that is, that is so cool, but when you're at a, you know, such a top level angler like you have been, especially dude, if Randall Tharp, if I'm sitting around with a group of guys and there are five of us there and four of them are like this jig, this jig, this jig, I'm just still gonna wait on for you to say what you're using. You know, I'm like, yeah, thanks guys, Randall. What are your thoughts on the jig? What rod do I need? What line do I need? Because you're just that guy. Like, you're the go-to. I'm going to ask you, oh, hey, what rod do you like for punching, Mr. Matt, you know, assassin? Like, I'm going to ask you. I'm not going to ask somebody else. So, you know, those companies are smart to hook up with you for sure on things like that. And it's cool to see, man. I know that ARC, they really, with the rods and reels, they've really gone – out on a limb, I feel like just tons of, and they throw the lures in there, dude. They're doing everything now. Like it's a one-stop shop. It's becoming that anyways, seems to be.
Yeah. And it's happened pretty quick, man. And I've invested a lot of time and effort in it, but my boss, the guy that owns a company, he's just unbelievably smart and he works 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And I just don't think there's going to, you know, many people that I've met in this industry willing to sacrifice what he has to build that brand, you know, as big as it is, as quickly as it is. And you know, we have a great team too. I mean, you know, Cobb and Logan are kind of core members, you know, we've got Bradley Roy and a couple other guys that I think really highly of. So, you know, and we have, you know, an awesome team at the shop, at the warehouse and stuff that, you know, handles customer service, any problems anybody may have. And, you know, it's pretty awesome. Like that's not the only startup company that I, you know, Bass Boat Technologies, my buddy fan. Like,
yeah, man.
Like I ran the first Mountie ever built, like, and you know, that guy's got 25 full-time employees now. Who would have ever dreamed?
Dude, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I talk to him about every day and who would have believed when we started that business that fishing would be what it, you know, guys would have six graphs on their boats and stuff. Back then we were just running two, and if you had 10 inch screens, like you were somebody, you know, like
yeah, it was the Rolls Royce. Yeah,
yeah. I mean it was just, I mean, a lot of that is just, you got to think it's just luck. Nobody could have envisioned what happened in the electronics industry, or nobody could have predicted that, you know, 10 15 years ago.
No, but I think for a company like them too, that word luck, it's the old saying of preparation meeting opportunity. They built a good product, they've been in the game, and then when the opportunity popped up, they were there. They were one of the biggest names in it. It's funny, and I'll tip my hat to them for sure. It's working for, you know, TH as long as I have. They've tried, you know, they've dabbled, and they've got some electronic mounts, but they've dabbled in things over the years. But a company like that, that was small, right? In the, you know, TH is a couple hundred million dollars. Like it's a big outfit now, especially and publicly traded and whatnot. But it's funny when those electronics mounts companies like Bass Boat and Precision Sonar, so many of them popped up. It was like, oh, well, those guys, those garage operations, you know, you would hear that kind of talk. And it's like, to think of them as these entities in the Bass Boat world, man, they have absolutely earned every bit of it. And it's awesome to see. Cause I think a lot can be said for how fluid you have to be too, right? That's an ever changing world. Whether it's like you said, when you had 210s, you were a rock star. Well, as the graphs sizes have changed, you know, the demand for the strength of the mounts has changed. The configurations have changed. Now you got guys running three up front, three at the back. So you have to stay on your toes. And those guys have been very good at that over the years. And yeah, they've been with you a long time. And I see they sponsor some MLF events, right? I think I see that.
Yeah, they have in the past. But I mean, one thing Van does, I mean, and Louis too at ARC, I mean, he's always trying to stay one step ahead. I mean, you've been around this business and you know how it works. And I mean, he works with Garmin, he works with Lowrance, yep. He works with Humminbird. If they come out with a new, you know, so all of those companies build really good products, but they don't really know how to make them work on a fast boat, and Van does. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he's working with them before you ever see a new graph or a new unit or a new trolling motor. You know, he's working with all those people to figure out how to make it work. And he has one way he stays on top of the game. And, you know, if you go buy a brand new hull, no matter what kind of boat it is, you know, next year, and there's some new electronics or a new trolling motor, he's already figured out how to make it work on there.
Problem solving. So right. You don't have to think about it. Makes your day on the water easier. It's amazing, man.
Yeah, I'm proud of what he's built there and just the team, you know, with not just those two companies. I mean, I'm spoiled, I think, now after doing this as long as I have, man. Every single company I work for, TH, Phoenix Boats, Yamaha Outboards, like I've watched them go through it all. And
yes,
you know, I'm proud to be associated with all of them. I mean, everybody's going to say they got the best, but I truly believe I do.
Well, I think you're a guy that you're a lot like myself, and that if you work with somebody, you believe in it. You know what I mean? It's not just fluff. It's because you're damn sure a guy that if you don't think it's working or if it doesn't, you know, you're not afraid to stand up and say, hey, I'm out, or hey, this is, you know, call a spade, great at calling balls and strikes. You always have been. You're that guy. And I think the coolest thing for me, and I shared it and I commented on it there on your social media, but watching the GOAT, Kevin Van Dam, his final regular season event ever, a lot of emotion going on, and he goes on this couple-minute speech about Randall Tharp and the class act you are, dude, and that he doesn't live in the gray area and he doesn't cheat and he's this and that. Given the year that's happened, you know, a lot of crazy in y'all's world on the Bass Pro Tour, but to hear that in his final tournament, man, and I'm not trying to blow your head up here, Randall Tharp, but dude, that's got to be one that, yeah, this year was an uncharacteristic year for you. You were below the red crest cut. You've made four of those, and you know, you're back in heavy hitters, which I feel like you're always going to be there because you're a big bass guy. But to hear Kevin throw all the trophies away, the most respected guy, the poster child of this entire industry for a very long time, sit there and just say, this guy right here, this guy, we end up in the same areas, he's the real deal, he is a fantastic human, dude, that had to just be awesome.
Yeah, I had no idea that he was going to say what he said or how it was going to play out that way, man. But there's only a, I can count on one hand the guys that I measure myself against day in and day out. And since I met him in two, I met him at the Classic in 2011. He was boat one. He had won Angler of the Year at the Classic. I pulled in New Orleans. I was boat three. The first person I see when I got into that boatyard, and you remember those classics back then, they
Yes.
were electric, man. Like,
Yes.
I mean, there was security guards and there was a crowd before the thing even started to get in that parking lot. And then I remember pulling in there and backing in, and my wife and I are like, oh my God, there's KVD. And like, he came over and introduced himself, and Kevin didn't admit it. Like, oh yeah, I've asked him about this, but when I saw the determination and look in his eyes, this is before practice started. It was like the second I met him, I knew he was going to win. And he said he didn't know he was going to win. But I can tell you that look of determination is something I'll never forget. It's something that, it's kind of fishing against that guy and around him as much as I have, especially the last couple of years. Dude, he's just set such a high bar. It's made me a better fisherman. He's made me a better person. And I'll be honest, man, like it's going to be hard going next year and not seeing him there, not having him there to measure myself against. And I can tell you, man, it doesn't matter if I finish 50th. If he's 51st, I feel good about, I
Of
feel better
course.
about myself.
Yeah.
And,
No doubt.
But to fast forward between mine and his relationship, when I left FLW and went to Bass, the very first event that my very first Elite Series event was on Seminole, and it was dark. It was just cracking daylight. I make about a 30-minute run down the lake. I pull into this pocket and I ran all the way to the back of this pocket to start fishing. Well, the very first boat I saw was Kevin Van Dam, and he started in the same pocket, and he started out for me, and he worked in. I started in and worked out, but watching a guy dissect water, it's been fun over the years, and kind of it's never changed between me and him. Like, I don't know if I should feel good about myself that I'm practicing and fishing around him so much, or bad because he always beats me, but.
Well, he is a vacuum, dude. Like he, I mean, you gotta like that. Yeah, it's fishing behind a hoop. That's fishing behind a Hoover, man. You can't expect to come out on top of that many times. I feel like over the years, just because it's like golfing with Tiger, I think.
Yeah, and just, I mean, that's happened throughout my whole career with him. And then, that tournament last week, it being his last, and we were in separate groups. So we both made the knockout round, and they let us trailer. So it was, here I am. I got a camera. He's got a camera. We're trailering down to where I was going to put in. And I'm running pretty quick. I'm probably about 80 pulling my boat, and I came up on Kevin Van Dam on the highway. That's going the same way. And I told my camera guy, my boat official, I said, let me tell you something. I said, I know where the winning school of fish is, and he does too. I know he found them too. That like there's 79 guys in this tournament, but there's only one besides me that would find that school of fish. And I called him. And I said, I know where you're going. And he started laughing. He goes, there ain't no way. I said, yeah, there is. Yeah, there
Unbelievable.
is. And sure enough, so he had won his group. So he was boat one. I was in third place. So I was the third boat going out. And so we were idling out of this long no wait. And sure enough, he hung a right. And I sat there and he went right to what I thought was the winning school of fish and what he thought too. So I went up there and stopped where I had fished. And I honestly, I didn't fish there. I made about three casts there in practice, and the water turned black with them, and I caught two great big ones.
Girl.
And then so I caught enough largemouth to make the cut. But I knew once I did that, I said, man, I need to go check these fish because this is my winning school of fish out here. I got to see if they're still there. And I literally went out there and made two more casts. I caught a 314 and one that was 414, and the water turned black with them again. And you can see them on your screen. They're just everywhere.
Jeez.
So that was 11:30. So I left. And that was where Kevin, he had fished it the first period each day. And when I pulled up on him out there, you know, before lines in, you know, and we started talking, he goes, you know, this is a winning school of fish. And I said, I 100% agree. It's a winning school of fish. I think there's enough here for both of us. But I'm going to tell you what, man, I'm going to go catch my largemouth. I'll come back maybe second period. I said, this is yours. And I left. And that's when he said what he said, you know, and it wasn't easy because my largemouth didn't bite at all. And I got those score tracker updates. I mean, he went from 10, 15 to 20 pounds, like it seemed like in just a matter of minutes. And man, I did. I wanted him to win the tournament. I felt like that was a way of me respecting him, what he's accomplished in this sport, and the fact that he did it. In my eyes, he's always done things the right way. I've never seen him do anything shady. I've never seen an asterisk by his name. And I mean, you're just talking about the most dominant tournament bass fisherman that will ever play the game. And that was my way of honoring him, man. And I, you know, I'm happy to call him a friend, man. Like just fishing around him all these years, like I said, it will not be the same next year for me.
No, not at all, man. For any of us, no matter where the path leads him in life, you know, I know he's quote retired, but that guy, and you know as well as I do, he's the most competitive human being that I've ever met, I think. It wouldn't matter if you're like, hey, you want to race to the mailbox and back? Like, he'd be like, okay, bet. He's just, that's just Kevin. Like, he is so competitive. So for him, you know, and I had a little chat with him at ICAST and about some things. And I know, I think he, and I'm not speaking for him, but I think that there's a lot of reasons that I think he's stepping away. And I think that for a guy like him, and it's a lot like a guy like you as well, that are veterans that have done it the right way for so long. You see a lot of the things going on in our sport and within your own organization, within bass. There are just things that pop up. We've seen so many this year, whether it was the Eufaula, the Joe Durham craziness, the crazy freaking lawyer hole sitting for the million-dollar kid, Tucker Smith. And like this just bizarre world we live in now. But it seems like nothing happens. I mean, the Smith kids down here on Pickwick right now and the College Bassmaster deal, and, you know, we're just supposed to be like, oh, yeah, that never happened. Congratulations. I just can't get on that bandwagon. I'm not that guy. I'm too big of a jerk, I guess, to just be like, oh, just a mistake, and mistakes happen, and blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of that after Cayuga with you guys that I just can't get past. And like you said, an asterisk by their name. It's a lot like the Mark McGwire home run era, I guess. They're juicing up, knocking the ball a million feet. But at the end of the day, they had an advantage over a lot of players. And I think that with that Cayuga event that's been so, you know, everybody's talked about it, but there were guys playing a different game in that event. You know, I saw Russ Lane posting, well, hell, I didn't know that there were some folks playing by a different set of rules. And we saw that there. And I know for a veteran guy like yourself, once the dust settles and you're like, man, I'm playing a different game than these guys, and that's not okay, right? And I think you voiced that. You made a video up at Saginaw, and I commented and meant every word of it. You're like, hey, I caught 19 pounds up here and I didn't catch one of them, the same fish twice. It was funny, but it was like also sad that you have to make that comment, I think, right? In life. Like I wish that wasn't even in the conversation. I wish we never had anything like that to talk about.
I do too. Like, you know, it's not a perfect world though. It does seem to get more complex every year. Since I've been doing this, like it's always been a part of the game. To me, it's for sure. Definitely worse now than it's ever been. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think you can point some fingers at the leagues. Yes. I think you can point some fingers at anglers and just, you know, not caring about things like respect or integrity or ethics or anything like that. You know, I think all of that is factors that go into that. But yeah, this year was a disappointment in my eyes from the way that all played out. You know, and unfortunately, man, I look at our tour and the large majority are all guys just like me. I feel like that try, you know, everything in their power to do things the right way.
Yes.
It's just a few. It's just the, it's the few that do things wrong, the wrong way. And unfortunately, you know, we all kind of get grouped into this. Oh, it's a bunch of cheaters over there fishing. And that's what I can't handle, man. Yeah, like I can't handle because I know how hard I work to do things the right way, or somebody like Kevin does. And then, you know, all of my friends out there that, man, we just want a fair contest and may the best guy win at the end of the week. And, you know, as a competitor, that's all you can ask for. But it just seems like these days, if there's something they can do to get an advantage, there's certain guys going to do it. And instead of just, hey, let's tee it up on the first hole and play by the rules. You know, and like I said, I think anglers could do a better job of holding other anglers accountable. I think the leagues could definitely do a better job of, you know, I don't know if it needs to be publicly making, you know, holding somebody accountable. I don't know if that's the right thing to do or not. You know, but to me, it's like our rule book gets thicker. It's way too complex, you know, polygraphs, all of this stuff that goes on. It just, I mean, you know, like we could go fish this Saturday at Gunnersville, a benefit tournament, and we sign a one-page set of rules, and there's a tournament director that's going to make you accountable to those rules. And, you know, most of the time it's a fair contest.
Yeah.
But it seems like the more money you fish for and the more complex everything gets, you know, it's not quite as fair as I think it should be. So,
yeah.
I hope that there's some changes made prior to us going fishing next year. I really do. I think, you know, you have to learn from your mistakes. Everybody does. I mean, everybody's made mistakes. You know, some of the anglers that did, you know, whatever, if they thought it was okay to catch the same fish twice, well, you know, I just hope they think about it next time.
Yeah, that's you know, I've talked about that on here a lot, and the Becker thing. Becker went an AOY. He definitely caught the same fish twice. I mean, he's admitted to such. He says it was within the rules that the tournament director said, that Daniel Fennell said he could do it, basically, as long as he didn't see it. And, you know, I don't know. For me, that's a slippery slope, right? And I think that comes down to self-policing. It's like you said, I think for me, and something that I've preached on here a lot, is there's a lot of desperation. You know, I did a whole episode on it a month or so ago. There's a lot of desperation in the sport, it seems to be, and I don't know if that's for a constant need to be on top or have something to post on social media. This, you know, constant content world we're in, there's a lot of pressure, and if you don't do good, you feel like you can't make the post that you need to make, or whatever the case may be. For a lot of guys and a lot of young guys fighting to get in, they seem to be a little more desperate than the veteran guys that are established, right? And that's what bothers me the most, is these dudes coming out of college and coming up in the ranks seem to be more willing to push the envelope more than a Kevin Van Dam or Randall Tharpe. So they can try to be Randall Tharpe and Kevin Van Dam. And when you're like me and you've been around forever and you're the old grumpy guy that calls balls and strikes, Randall Tharpe and Kevin Van Dam never lived that way to become Kevin Van Dam and Randall Tharpe. That's the problem I have with it. And something that you said that jumps out is I do think the anglers, I think that you have to hold each other accountable, because it does seem like the leagues aren't going to do it for the most part. And I think that you guys, I've said that, I picked on Jacob on here, and he texted me like, why are you picking on me? I just used him as an example, because he's one of the biggest names in the sport. I'm like, if LeBron James got poked in the eye running down the court, I've used this a lot, he at a press conference, he would say, yeah, so-and-so poked me in the eye, he's a piece of garbage. You know what I mean? He would talk about it. And so if somebody's taking my money and they're doing it the wrong way, I think that we would be better off if, I mean, dude, you see it in NASCAR, you see it in other sports where they call the guy out. And I think that, yeah, we're a tight-knit group, it's a tiny industry, but I think the anglers almost have to take ownership in it, not only to themselves operate like they should and by the rules and don't do anything shady and don't live in the gray area, but then if something happens, you know, hey, this guy did this and this is bull crap. You know, I think that fans would certainly enjoy it, Randall.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And, you know, addition to the leagues and the anglers, I mean, I think the industry, to some extent, I think they've actually been doing a better job lately of holding anglers accountable for their actions than they did in the past. You know, they were, you know, there was a time, I think they were just like, you know, I can't speak for certain companies or anything, but there was a time that they just wanted everything to be swept under the rug.
For
and
sure.
I think they see a need to, I think no matter what company it is, you know, I think they're being a little pickier when they choose who's going to work for them and who's not. And, you know, if a guy does something, I would say unethical, or it doesn't reflect well on them, I do think they're, you know, from what I'm seeing lately, the last 3 or 4 years, the industry is holding anglers accountable better than it used to.
Yeah, I think so. I hope that gets better too across the board. A lot of companies are willing to overlook things as long as Johnny is selling the most tackle for them, I guess. and you know, whatever. But I think that, you know, if the companies that write the checks hold the leagues accountable and they hold the anglers accountable, then, you know, obviously I think we could see things get a lot better. And I don't know, man, I want things to get away from the gray, and it shouldn't take this, what we saw just in the Cayuga event alone, we shouldn't have to have all these conversations for months about it, about the what ifs and who was doing it, who wasn't. It should just been cut and dry, and this is done. But like you said, the league and the anglers are responsible in that just being this blurred out mess, and then Spencer Sheffield's the only one that just gets hammered in the thing. Now, rightfully so, you know, on camera, whatever, but there were others, and poor Spencer's just like, here, take my money back.
Yeah, you know. that was probably the most negative thing that's ever happened in this sport since I've been doing it. Like, it was just unfortunate. I honestly, man, I fished one tournament. I just missed the cut. I had no idea anything was happening, and Cliff Crochet and I went up to one of the Great Lakes and was fishing on knockout round day, and his phone started ringing, and he's like, Randall, you ain't gonna believe what's going on. And I was like, what's going on now? You know, what's the next thing? And he started telling me. So I sat there during the championship round and watched that whole day, and I was just really pretty shocked at what I saw. And you know, just so people understand, you know, I, as far as that sight fishing rule and how all that happened. So the second year we were on the Bass Pro Tour, we had an incident at Lake Fork. And so, and it had to do with an angler snagging some fish or whatever. And so we read the rule, and the rule was rewritten at that time. So then fast forward, I think it may have been a couple years later, we had another sight fishing event at St. Lawrence River. Mm-hmm. And it was every fish counts then. It wasn't a limit tournament. And there was a lot of guys in the top 10 that caught the same fish more than one time in the same day.
Yeah, just over and over.
So we rewrote the rule again because none of us thought that was ethical or the right thing to be doing, but it was within the rules.
Right.
And that nobody that did that in that tournament broke a rule. So we rewrote the rule again. And the intent of the rule was that you could, if you were going to sight fish, you could only catch a fish one time.
That fish was gone. Act like it's not there anymore. Yes.
But that's correct. And I read the rules several times a year. I read the rule the way it was written in our rule book this year. And I still don't think it's okay to catch the same fish more than once in a day. So that was what I was playing by, and that's what the majority of the guys in that tournament was playing by. But it was not what, you know, a lot of guys in that top 10, that's not what they were doing from what I saw. So, you know, man, like I think a lot of that could have been avoided. I think there were some mistakes. I think the tournament director obviously made a big one. I think most of that could have been avoided if he had just said, no, if you catch the same fish twice, you're going to be DQ.
Yep.
I think, like I said, everybody's going to learn from their mistakes. And I hope that, you know, I think they've since changed the rule. I know they have. Not that it matters, but
I was going to say now.
A word has more than one meaning, and a sentence, you could take any sentence in the rule book and you can interpret different ways.
Yeah.
It's just, it needs to be more black and white. It needs to just be, you know, there shouldn't be month-long investigations over something that you can see on camera. I mean, that's just my two cents.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that and look, you're like me. You call balls and strikes. You're there's no black and white. I mean, no gray. It's black and white. And that was what I said. Like, well, I mean, I don't know why we're investigating anything. I can just my kids can see what's going on. I mean, it's pretty easy. This is the year of the no look cast. Mom, no, I'm not looking. I mean, oops, that 5-pounder bit again. My bad. I mean, it's silly. It's silly.
Yeah, you know what, dude? It's we don't need to be negative either. Like, no. There's so many positive things.
1,000,000%.
You know, and I'm past it. I hope all the guys are past it. I hope the league is past it. You know, and let's learn from it and let's continue to build something and make it better. I mean, that's, you know, I'm kind of just done with it. And I'm getting ready to go fish next year. So
And that's kind of where I was going with that, because you made a post and I just wanted to pick your brain about, you know, what's ahead. We shall see coming home from Saginaw. You know, you made a post like 20-hour drive home, lots of time to reflect and what's ahead. But, you know, I had Burge on 2 weeks ago and we kind of talked about this. To make a leap, like even if you disagree with things going on or whatever, and I'm not saying you do. Obviously, with that event, you very much disagreed. But as a whole, like you are at the top level of professional bass fishing. You have qualified, you know, whether it was to be on the tour, whether it was to be on the elites, and then you made the decision to go to BPT when all that started, and you've been there ever, you know, since the beginning, and you've been through all the changes, you've seen it. But to leave, you know, to make that decision, if anybody was going to make that decision, we've seen guys do that. There aren't, in my opinion, a lot of options. And Burge said that. It's got to be terrifying, even if you disagree with what's going on. Like, what are you going to do? If you go fish the opens, we know that's a gauntlet, man. I mean, it's a gauntlet. It's like freaking gauntlet, dude. That you know, and look, you're a guy that's fortunate to have sponsors and you're not relying on tournament winnings as much anymore. Thank goodness, because if you were in the opens, you can't rely on tournament winnings. It's tough, right? Like, that's a tough gig. And we've seen guys do that. So to leave something like the Bass Pro Tour or vice versa, the Elite Series, if you're there because you disagree with something, that's a hard move. And I think for fans, they're like, well, I don't know why these guys don't leave if this is going on. Because look, I've talked to guys like you and several others that are very, 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 very frustrated with how things are handled. But at the end of the day, when it's your livelihood, I don't know how you can leave. Is that a fair? I mean, I think that's a fair statement.
No, I think it's pretty fair. And it's not all my decision. I mean, every single company I work for, yes, plays a role in the what's best for each one of them.
Yes.
You know, as far as me going back to the Elite Series, you know, Brandon Cobb, we have Brandon Cobb on the Elite Series. He's leading angler of the year right now with two tournaments to go. He's done a great job for us. We got Wes Logan over there. Like, you know, would it be beneficial for everybody on Team Arc to be fishing the same trail? I don't think it would be.
Yeah,
like we want to keep our product in front of as many eyes as possible. So, you know, would it make good business sense for my boss there to tell me to go back to Bass? No, to me, I mean, it wouldn't. So, you know, but for me, those conversations are happening right now. You know, we just got back. I've signed a lot of contracts already for next year. But I have a couple, you know, more important conversations that will happen. I honestly, for me, I don't anticipate leaving the BPT. But I am considering fishing some other things, whether it be a few opens, whether it be the MPFL.
Ooh, hey now.
Anything.
Hey now. I know a guy.
I mean, I just, you know, I miss those days, those Gunnersville days we were talking about,
yes,
when it
man.
Seemed to be a lot simpler. And, you know, I still love tournament bass fishing. I love everything about it. I love fishing against like a good group of guys. And you know, it's whether it's a Tuesday night or up here at the river or the MPFL or an open, you know, I just want to go have some fun. And I do. Like I room with Lintner this year. He's a great guy. I've talked to Russ Lane about rooming with him possibly some next year, and Todd Faircloth. So, you know, we like to cook. We like to catch some fish, you know, cash some checks. And you know, that's not going to change for me.
Listen, if you get around Russ, I'm just worried he might try to put you. He's on this diet thing now, Big Daddy. He's pushing this weight loss stuff. I just don't know what's happening with old Big Pop. I don't know. He looks great. Well, He's doing it. I like to give Russ a hard time. I roomed with Russ in the opens when I was like 19, so I've been knowing that man for a minute. I like to give Russ a hard time. I got to get him on here one of these days.
Yeah. He's a great guy, and he actually, I texted with him yesterday, and I said, man, you're looking good, and he's like, I picked him as my team partner in that team series okay. that we will film. I think we're filming our deal in October, so it's me and Gerald Spohr, who I know you know's been on the show, and Big Daddy is my team, and I didn't pick the team. I mean, there was a lot of, like, I would call them fishing legends that I had to choose from, but I picked the team that I knew I was going to have the most fun with.
For
so,
sure.
And I, there is no doubt that we may get the, you know, waxed in that thing, but I got a feeling we're going to go have a good time. And if we're having a good time, we're going to have a good chance to win.
Listen, my Spoyer is that guy where he and I certainly have had a roller coaster of a relationship because of this dumb podcast. But he is a guy that I'm a fan of, and hell, I consider him a friend now. And we were before, and then we had words and whatever. It's going back 4 years ago. And dude, whenever this stuff was at the height of MLF, you know, wanting to blow my house up kind of stuff back in 2019, want my head on a platter, which was, it's funny to think about now, but anyways, but Spoyer was like the one dude that was like, I'm going on there and I'm going to give this dude a piece of my mind. And we had a great conversation. It's still one of my favorite podcasts that I've ever done. And then I got him on, I guess, with the Five Fish Change last year. And it was right before he was going overseas to get married and all that. And again, another one of my favorite podcast I've ever done was Spoyer. So those two guys on a team, y'all would be a hell of a trio, I think, to hang out with for sure.
Yeah, and if it comes to where we come to blows, like, I'm just going to stand behind those two. They're both pretty big, solid fellas.
Yeah,
you know, look, I know they got my back.
Listen, Russ is dang sure one that I would not tangle with. Spoyer's a big old boy, too. But, oh, Big Pop, that right hand, I don't think I'd want to be in the way of it if it came sailing around. That's for dang sure, man. And can throw a fastball. Still, no telling what he can throw one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, man. Like, you know, we don't know where we're going to fish or anything yet.
I was going to say, no clue where that's going to be yet. So,
No. I was really skeptical about that whole thing last year. And I was pleasantly surprised, like, after competing in that format. Like, what was fascinating was just, you know, like, I pride my, all of us are very good at breaking down water, strange lakes, do it really quick. Like, you know, like I say, a good fisherman, like somebody like Ayler, can go to a lake and never seen it in his life, and by the end of the day, he's going to beat your brains out. And that's how most of the guys on our tour, that's the kind of talent level that they have. They don't need waypoints. They don't need any information. Just let them do their thing. And, but in that format, the team series format, if you don't figure it out in 15 minutes, you're behind.
Yes.
Like, and just the back and forth between the teammates and just what you can figure out based on one bite or seeing one shad flicker. And I mean, you know, for a guy that's obsessed with breaking water down quickly, when you see how quick it can take with three really good anglers, you know, talking, looking at different parts of the lake, like, it was, I mean, dude, it was fun. And we had my team made it to the championship match. So we got to fish a lot in that format. And I loved every minute of it.
Yeah. I think I've only got to see a little bit. I don't have Outdoor Channel anymore, unfortunately, but I've watched some of them. I've got to see it. And it's intriguing to watch, like you're saying, the breaking down of the water, but just the communication going back and forth. Everybody can hear everybody the whole time. It's like, hey, yeah, I got one. Like, I love that. Like, if there's other boats around, like, hey, yeah, I got one. Trying to be quiet. What did it weigh? Oh, it was a 3-2 or whatever. What'd you catch it on? Everybody's trying to put those puzzle pieces together. It's like if you practice, which I think you guys can't talk to each other about what's going on. I can't remember if that rule's been changed or not, but it reminds me of when you room with a couple dudes that you trust, you know, like in my old FLW days, and that's how practice is. When you trust people, right? You're like, okay, well, yeah. Hey, I just figured this out. I got this clue. So you call your bud and you're like, hey, flipping a jig on wood, 2 to 5 feet of water, you know, back of a creek, whatever. And they're like, okay. And then they call you back 2 hours and go, hey, we'll add this in. And, you know, but it reminded me of that, but just in a lot more fast-paced setting on game day.
Yeah, it's very similar to what you're describing, just faster, instant, and just I think the good teams just communicated good information. And, you know, if you watch it, and I haven't watched all, I've watched some of them. I don't watch too much of that type of fishing show on TV, but the ones I have watched, the teams that won had the best communication. And so I'm looking forward to teeing it up with those two. I've got that. I got a couple more TV shows I'm going to go do. And, my off seasons aren't quite as off as they used to be, but that's where I'm at.
Well, dude, I appreciate you taking the time to come on. I've been wanting to have you on for a long time. And after Kevin Van Dam, and anybody that knows, because I have guys that go, hey, man, you've never had me on. You've been doing this thing forever. And I'm like, the way my random ADHD brain works, because people are like, do you know when you're going to have who you're going to have on? And I'm like, yeah, most of the time I decide like a day before I record. That's how professional this is. You know, if my sponsors are listening, I'm professional. Okay. But a lot of times sometimes I have an idea, but really it depends on, you know, honestly, what kind of mood I'm in, but something will pop up on social. And I had seen again, the Van Dam speech about you popped up this week. And I was like, man, I got to get Randall on. I want to talk to him. And so I really appreciate you, coming on. And I want to end with this just cause I thought this was hilarious when you made your post and you were like, no fish were caught twice and blah, blah, blah. About your 19-pound day up there in the comments, and somebody screenshot this and sent it to me. Even Matt Heron commented and said, "You still cut me off, but you're a good guy." I loved it.
Dude, I love old Grumpy. I love old Matt. I talk to Matt pretty regular too.
That made me laugh so hard. I know you do. And I love me some Matt Heron. He's another guy I got to get on here. We'd have a good time. But I love that. I saw somebody sent it to me, and I'm like, that is what this is all about for me. Right there, just reliving old stories. And because you and him used to compete against each other in Alabama, you know, the old Bama contingency there. But so fun to see that kind of stuff, man.
We fished against each other a bunch, had a lot of history prior to us being professional anglers. And I mean, man, we hashed it out on the water. It's unfortunate, but that me and him are both known for that more than our accomplishments on the water. But I think I don't think either one of us would change it now. Like if you pull up bass fishing fights, it's still going to be the best one. Even bigger than KVD and Ike and Ellie.
Yeah. It takes the top spot in the rankings. Dude, I need to do a show on that. I need to do a show on the top 5 bass fishing fights and have everybody on here. That'd be hilarious, actually. I'm glad you said that. That one was pretty epic because you both just aired it out like men, and then it was over with. That was it. That was that. It was so funny, man. There have been some good ones. I remember Drew Benton and Scott Martin. That one was pretty funny too, from back in the FLW days.
You talked about how competitive he is, how competitive Kevin is. We're all that way. And that's why that happened. I got into it with Big Daddy this year at Gunnersville. And we weren't even fishing. We weren't even fishing. So I know that's another story for another time.
Yes, but, I got to hear that one of these days. That's a good teaser. That's a good teaser. So
you can get Big Daddy to tell it, or if you want to have me back on, I'll be happy to tell you some more KVD and fight stories.
I love it, buddy. Well, I'll tell you what, put you on the spot here on LBL. The next one of these we do together will be at PSJ. I'm coming down. I'll bring the gear, and we'll do one from the boat.
We can make that happen.
That sounds like a good time, my friend. I appreciate you, Randall. Thanks for everything. And if you're not following Randall Tharpe on all social media, which I'm sure you are, he's got a lot of followers, but make sure you're following along, dude. He's one of the most honest, hardworking guys out there doing it the right way. Randall Tharpe, I appreciate you.
Thank you, Luke.
Thanks, buddy. Randall Tharpe, everybody, right there, the honey badger. Good dude. good dude. Thankful for him and the conversation there, man. Hope you guys enjoyed that. It's like catching up with an old friend. He has been around the world and back. Dude, to think, and I know I said late 90s, early 2000s, we're talking about his Gunnersville days, but, you know, in that 2003, 2005 time frame, that's 20 freaking years ago. I'm so old, man. So old. Conversations like that make me feel old because I used to just be the kind of like the punk kid around all those guys, and now I'm just this 40-year-old fat guy with a podcast. It is what it is. But I appreciate his honesty. And I appreciate him coming on, taking the time to do it here for all the lowlifers. And I thank all y'all, every one of y'all for tuning in, week out, Low Budget Live. Be sure to support the people that support the show, all the sponsors. I appreciate y'all. I'm going to take you out with some, I think we're going to listen to 64 again, 64 tonight. And I will see y'all next week.
See ya.
I'm sitting here tonight next to the big river.